Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 142. On this week's show, we are going to give our impressions of Toy Story Land, review Ant-Man and the Wasp, and bring the news of the week. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype from the Main Street Gazette is Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Pete. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs. For visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, entering the quantum realm, visit the experts over at MEI-travel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Who are we? We are Last Gen Podcasts. That's LastGenPodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter for this show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. We're on Facebook if you search Disney Magic Hour. And you can find the show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. Melissa, where can everyone find the pictures in the Patreon?
On Instagram, we're at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you head over to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, you can find ways to support the show there.
And I totally forgot to post about the screening tomorrow. I will do it right after we are done here for tomorrow's live thread of I'm not sure what. Figure it out. Probably Ant-Man. Ryan, where can everyone find you in the Main Street Gazette?
It's at mainstgazette.com. If you're looking for Twitter or Instagram, it's mainstgazette. And if you search for the Main Street Gazette on Facebook, you'll find our page.
Courtney is out on sabbatical, as she's a little under the weather today, this week. And so here we are. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to get to the news right away. And then me and Melissa will give our impressions of Toy Story Land, which will include voices and hand puppets.
No.
Yes, Melissa.
Just in Courtney's absence, I would like to mention, because her and I just did the first podcast for our summer reading series. We reviewed The Princess Companion, which is the first book in the Four Kingdoms series by Melanie Cellier, however you want to pronounce it. It's spelt like that, so yes. But so we're going to be going on to the next book, The Princess Fugitive. So if you want to join, you can head over on Facebook where we have the DMH Book Club group. You can come and join us and read along for our fun summertime stuff.
Princess Fugitive, as read by Tommy Lee Jones.
No.
The only way that I can get in there, I think.
No.
Wagging my finger at you, of course. All right, so let's talk about some news first, guys. We have a lot of news, Universal news, Disney news, movie news. Three of them, as a matter of fact. So we're going to start with Universal. A couple of weeks ago, they updated the video in the Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey attraction over in Islands of Adventure. And me and Melissa got a chance to go on it just this week because, quite frankly, I did not know that they did this. I was very excited when I heard this, and we went just within a couple of days later as our schedule permitted, basically. So there's great news and then weird news on this. So the great news is it looks really good. It helps immensely from the washed out, hazy looking film that was there before. It really, really adds to the attraction and it covers up the problem that the only problem I ever had with it. There is one big issue though with all that cover up. Melissa, do you want to describe? Because we were next to each other, obviously, in the round. I was like, oh, that is bad. That was my only reaction.
You.
Yeah.
I was just laughing because the dragon, when he appears and breathes fire at you, looks like a video game dragon that has lost his textures. It's very bad.
It is bad. And the thing is that there's other parts where fully CG characters, kind of come at you. In a way that the snitch, kind of flies right up into your face again on the video, and a Dementor, flies up to you, and those look fine, or at least they felt like they looked fine when I watched it.
They were definitely, if there was anything wrong, they weren't as noticeable as that dragon.
Yeah, but when the dragon came up, I was like, that is bad. What is that? So I don't know what the hell happened there. But beyond that, phenomenal update. Really loved it. The only thing that worries me is, the last two out of three times I've been on that attraction, the Whomping Willow does not womp. It simply willows.
Just womp womp.
Womp womp. So I am worried, as I said this before, I'm worried it's going to become Universal's Yeti, where it just stops working and they don't fix it. So I don't know. Again, it was a number of weeks ago I went on it and it wasn't working. And then I went on it quickly afterwards and it was working. And now 3 or 4 days ago, it was not working again. I don't know what happened in between that time. I'm going to go again. Actually, I really want to go again this weekend.
And I want to see. This weekend.
Why not?
Because we're going to be in Fort Lauderdale.
That's right. We're going to a con. We're going to meet Mike Coulter, Luke Cage. So I'll go Monday or whatever. I'll go soon. And I want to see because that is really, if that piece got working predominantly, like working, ride's a hell of a ride. I don't know if it tops Spider-Man for me, but it's actually, I think it might.
It does for me because it's like less screens than Spider-Man. It's more practical stuff.
There is a lot of practical stuff. Spider-Man has a ton of practical stuff, though.
But not as much as...
Not as much. No. Okay. Not as much. Especially when that Wampin' Will be a Wamplin. All right. So that's a little bit of Universal newsies for you. There is also a new projection show that they're doing over the water. Another, you know, salute to cinema sort of thing. I have not seen that yet because it never stops raining. So I'm tired of going to the parks and being in the rain for 4 hours a day. So I haven't been able to see that, but I will see it hopefully over the next week. And I'll, you know, tell you how I think about next week. In the Disney news realm, there were two rather relatively big things that happened. One has to do with Studio with Episode 9, in that Billy Dee Williams is going to return as Lando for Episode 9, and Kerry Russell of The Americans and Felicity has been added to the cast. So, Ryan, do we need more nods to films that already happened?
No. I'm totally fine with going in new directions, but you know, if we need to give Lando a piece of the screen, considering you know we don't have many actors left from the original trilogy, that's fine. I don't need a long arc involving him.
Do you think that maybe he just sort of he takes over Leia's role as in like commanding the army of the rebellion?
I kind of think that's what they're gonna do. I kind of think that. You know, she knew that Episode 9 was going to be her big movie, that she was going to have the lion's share of that piece. And knowing that that's not going to happen, knowing that they're not recreating her, so far as we know, I think that was the choice they had, and that's what they went with.
They've been pretty adamant about saying they're not going to recreate her, so I don't see that happening.
And they got rid of Ackbar, too, so that's kind of our option at this point.
Also, guys, Ackbar had a couple of lines. He's, you know, anyways, we need his funeral scene. Shut up. By the way, there's also, and just to prove that all petitions are stupid, even if, in theory, I agree with their topic, there is a new, there's a new petition that Colin Trevorrow must not direct Jurassic World 3 and J.A. Boyena should.
Who?
The guy who directed the one that just happened.
Why?
Because at least it's visually interesting. There are people, about 50%, who think that Jurassic World movie is good. Fallen Kingdom. They think it's good. That movie is garbage.
I mean, okay, maybe it looks okay. But
yeah, well, at least it looks okay. Yeah. I mean, the first one was visually boring. There was nothing new to look at in that first movie.
Margaritaville.
That was a cool part, actually.
That was the only part.
That was a cool part. but yeah. So yeah, and that petition, stupid. All petitions like this are stupid. Get over it.
Can I just petition for more Donald Glover as Lando? Like, let's just do that.
No.
Yes.
No,
there's probably already several of those out there.
we're gonna talk about that when we talk about Ant-Man and Wasp little bit. Well, I guess we'll just talk about it now. In a sense, we'll just talk about it now. So Ant-Man and Wasp made about like what, $77 million or so this weekend.
Oh, I saw this. Yeah,
and you know it's like, oh, good. You know, it made a good return. You know, this isn't one of the main films, and everyone's coming down from the Avengers high and blah blah blah. Solo made more money than that. Why isn't the same line drawn?
It's like that level of expectation versus return, like, kind of thing. Like, your expectation, I guess, wasn't high for Ant-Man, so because it made more than what they expected, they're like, oh, this is great. And then the vice versa was true for Solo. Like, even though Solo did very well at the box office, I guess, like, they thought that it was supposed to do higher or whatever. I read that too.
Yeah, I saw that. That, you know, everyone now goes off these, you know, the predictions, the box office prediction. If it doesn't hit that number, it's a failure.
Is it the box office prediction more so, or is it just like what people think it might do? Like, you know, like if it's a Star Wars franchise film versus like this spin-off, not spin-off, but, you know, like the lesser Marvel. No, I was talking about Ant-Man. Oh. Like the lesser of the Marvel character movies, you know, like if you were going to compare Ant-Man and Iron Man, like, you know, you're expecting Iron Man to do better than Ant-Man. So now it's like kind of the same thing. Like you're expecting Solo, Star Wars to do better than Ant-Man. And like, so then when the numbers don't blow Solo, you know, away, then it's like.
But that's my point. I don't think that these movies, these little side project movies, not even side project, but whatever, the Star Wars stories films. I think it's unreasonable to expect for them to make as much as the main trilogy. Rogue One was an anomaly because it was the first one. We were all super curious, like, what the hell is this? What are we doing? You know, so like that drove a lot of people to the theater because it was the first time. I don't think that drove them the second time. Also, it was the third big movie to come out in 4 weeks, and most people don't go to the movies that much.
Yeah, it was rough timing. Also, I think that, you know, the Solo itself just had issues with, you know, people being, you know, wary of this guy who's playing, you know, a character that was so, you know, well loved by, but played by, you know, Harrison Ford. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I understand all that. I'm just saying that I think the expectation thing is silly that we, you know, base whether or not a movie is good or not based on how much it made at the box office. It's just weird. And then when that rule on one film was like, well, that means it's great. You know, it's like, what? Anyways, what else we got? Ryan, Kerry Russell.
Yes. Exciting addition.
Definitely going to be Ray's mom, right? That's exciting. I mean, that's obviously what the internet said about this immediately was, oh, here are the reasons why Kerry Russell must be her mom.
They look like they're the same age.
It's like, shh, these people are the worst. No,
just turn off the internet box and walk away. Like, that's really what that is. It's a great addition. She's a wonderful actress. Like, I'm really interested to see where we go with that character. If you're, I wouldn't expect more than what we got with Laura Dern. You know, that kind of meal. Maybe not necessarily within the Armada kind of a piece, but I expect that kind of a capacity of a role. I don't think this is going to be anything earth shattering.
It would be cool if she took over like Captain Phasma's kind of role, like being like part of the First Order. Like,
I'd like Hux to get knocked down a peg and her to be put in Hux's place.
Mm. Yeah, something cool like that would be.
Yeah, it seems a large talent to toss into the last movie of a trilogy.
It does, and you know, if prior to, you know, them saying that they're going to stall the Star Wars stories. In the anthology films, I would have said maybe this is a character we're going to want to learn more about, and that's the spin out. Now I don't know. You know, now I don't know what that sign up, you know, what that looks like. So, and it may just be a, you know, someone to bring in to fill a role that they needed somebody who has some chops. Mm. So,
chops. I need someone with hard chops on this project. That's how J.J. Abrams talks.
No,
that's exactly how he talks.
No. That's not so much.
I don't believe anyone. So finally, we have some news about Indiana Jones. Now, a couple weeks ago, it was reported that Indiana Jones was going to miss its initial release date of summer of 2020 because it was due to start filming early next year or mid next year, something like that. But Spielberg be directing films like never before in his career. He's really lining up the projects right now. He has one in particular I can't remember. It was like a spy thriller, I think, with Mark. Oh, God. He's in everything. That's awesome. What's his name?
I don't know. That's a really weird...
He was in Ready Player One. He was in Bridge of Spies. I have to look it up because it's going to drive me crazy.
The BFG.
Yeah, that's him. Mark Rylance.
Mark Rylance, yes.
So he's doing a movie with Mark Rylance very soon. It's actually, I believe that's in, you know, it hasn't started filming or anything, but it's, you know, in the works. And he is supposed to also be doing a remake of, help me out here, of West Side Story.
Yeah.
So, oh, there it is. The kidnapping of Edgardo Montara. He plays at a pub. But also, who's in it? Oscar Isaac. So everyone keep your eyes open for that movie. That's going to be something special, I think.
So between that and Jonathan Kasdan, who recently penned the solo script, he is actually going to be doing a rewrite of the original draft written by David Koepp, who is no longer available because he's working on a film with Blumhouse titled You Should Have Left.
They're basically just not going to get their shooting date started, and they can't fit it into the schedules of Spielberg until the next year. So quickly after that, everyone was like, oh, well, they're probably never going to make it, and you'll never hear about it again. And so they announced the release date today of July 9th, 2021.
Cool.
So they seem real dedicated to making this flick. It was originally supposed to open July 10th, so it's literally going back a year. And there you go. You know, Jungle Cruise, you know, got shifted over to October 11th. Maleficent's going to be hitting theaters also May 29th of 2020. So they've done quite a bit of shifting. Mary Poppins is no longer December 25th. It's December 19th. Just a lot of, you know, a lot of shifting around. But the Indiana Jones thing was the biggest. But I think the biggest takeaway from this was there was the report that it was going to be delayed. It was. And then very quickly, it was given a not summer of 2021, not July, like July 9th. They gave it a very specific date. So I think we're going to get that movie. I don't think that that's going to get delayed further. I think that that is where it's going to fit. And now the question is,
what do they do with the stunt show?
It fills up every time. I guess they really don't have to do anything. I agree with you. Like, I'd love to see something new, but man, if it's filled every time, I don't really think that's going to impress upon anyone to put the money into that. Ryan, he's going to be Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford, also known as, is going to be, I believe, 79 years old when this movie comes out. He rode off into the sunset in Last Crusade. It kind of was a perfect ending. You can equate it to like the way Toy Story 3 ended. Obviously, Crystal Skull has left much to be desired. I think that elements of what the issue with that is no longer around. I want to have the highest of hopes for this movie, and I will, but I just want to, you know, do you care? Do you care?
Yes. You know, I want him to have a proper send-off. I want the closure to be good. I feel like we had it. We lost it. We're trying to get back that love and feeling. you know, I don't know. I do care, but it is getting to the point where it's like, okay, we're getting into you're not doing your own stunt territory, which he didn't do all of them to begin with. But we're getting into the territory where it's becoming less and less believable for him to pull off some of the things that we see. So you know, I'm cautiously optimistic given all the hands that are in it. Well, given what hands are in it, but it's a wait and see game.
So what if now? Obviously, I'm not going on anything. This is just based on like what I'd love to see.
Yeah.
What if it was less tank chase? Wow, in the desert, and more solving riddles in the library.
You know what? I'm fine with that. That's been a lot of the, you know, the old LucasArts games. You can go through down that pipeline, and there's a lot of great games that are less action heavy, more puzzle heavy. And I'm fine with showing off that skill. Like that's, you know, and we don't even have to be in Africa. Let's put it in South America properly again, or let's go into, you know, Southeast Asia. Let's do something different. I'm game for that.
That's what I really would love to see. You know, I would love to see that, you know, the archaeology portion of the Indiana Jones films getting maybe a little bit more of a spotlight, highlighting that he can't punch his way through the problems anymore. You know, I kind of thought that was going to happen in the last one, but we didn't
surprise.
Get that. Yeah, we didn't get that. We got swinging through the trees and stuff like that. That's a thing that happens in that movie. There's a whole
alongside
goddamn,
monkeys.
Yeah, it's a whole goddamn Tarzan thing that happens in that movie. One man gets eaten by ants.
Yeah.
Well, that's realistic. Yeah.
Actually, I was okay with that. I was like, yeah, it's fine. Yeah. That's the thing. Fine. Like, I'm fine with some things, but the driving over the cliff was something I did not like, especially when at the end, Karen Allen is like still manically driving just a steering wheel. And I was like, oh, is she
while on a tree branch crazy? That's just dropping in?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little too much. Even made the whoop noise. This is, you know, it's a weird movie. All right, Indiana Jones. I'm actually crazy excited because I actually do think that I think that this is going to be a film made with a purpose. Because I think everyone involved understands that the other one wasn't good. Melissa.
Speaking of Hollywood Studios.
Speaking of Hollywood Studios. Yeah. Land Story Toys. Tell me about them. We finally got to see Toy Story Land. And we actually got to see it quite a bit. We were there opening day.
Yes.
We have been there a couple of times at night, or at least one time at night.
One time at night.
And we even got to go there for a Parks Blog viewing.
Pre-sunrise.
My God, was it early. And we got to, you know, really kind of experience a park with only about, 200 other people?
Well, the Parks Blog said 250 winners, so that's those right, winners the plus the guests, 500. So, but still, under 1,000 people in that land.
Yeah.
For at least an hour.
And... so tell me, what do you think? I think that we've spent ample time, ample Hills ice cream. My God, that'd be so good right now. Oh, I want ice cream. What do you think?
I like it. I like it a lot.
I like it.
I was impressed by the details that they put into the land. The way that they kind of make you feel like you have shrunk down is really cool. You know, a lot of people have said like, okay, there's no like archway, like, you know, how you go into Adventureland and there's the big banner and you walk under it and you're in this new land. Like you're just kind of walking along and you just see Woody kind of hanging out and that's your entranceway. But if you think about it, like if it's supposed to be you kind of going down into this, you know, toy size thing, I like that. It's not just a, you know, quick, like, okay, now you're here. Like it's kind of like a transition.
What if there was a banner that said, "You're killing me, Buster"?
No.
Okay. What if there was a banner that said, "Welcome, Andy's Toys"? Something like that.
Well, that's what Woody says.
Yeah, okay. What if there's a banner, though?
No.
Oh, all right.
Why do you want a banner?
I like archways.
I want archways on the other side of Toy Story Land when you're going into Galaxy's Edge. That's where I want an archway.
I think we have to wait till that's going to be, because that's obviously not what it's going to be a year from now, or a little more than a year from now. So, okay, so you like the details of the land that we all love. You should listen to that land, by the way, if you ever get the chance. What about the attractions?
I like Slinky Dog. I think the way they did it's really interesting because they make it like this is a toy that Andy has assembled. So it's really cool in the queue. You know, you have the instructions, you have pieces of the track like left over or whatever, which, you know, makes you worried if there's enough track. But no, we're all good.
House on Haunted Hill.
No. I like the details in the queue of Slinky Dog. And I think the attraction is fun. I think it's a good family. It's an upgraded family coaster, I would say. Because it's not like straight up family coaster like Barnstormer. Like it does have like a little bit of thrill to it. But it's nothing like Everest or Big Thunder.
No. Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun little coaster.
Yeah.
It is distracting to go on it right now and not just look at Star Wars, though. I can't help it. The first time that we rode that thing, I was legitimately shocked. Because you reach this hill and you can see clearly onto the floor and everything of Star Wars Galaxies. And that distracted me for like the next 20 seconds. I was looking over my shoulder. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fine. I think it's a good addition. Okay, so I'm trying to equate this because we walked in there and we walked around and there's no avenues to kind of explore.
No, it's just one main path that has like the three attractions kind of branching off of it.
Yeah, there's nowhere to really kind of like look around. There's nothing like that. There's a ton of detail.
Yeah.
Like the detail that they put into the space that they use is quite impressive. It really, really is. Every aspect of the land is themed really well. Mm-hmm. Except for the queue at Alien Flying saucer spin.
Swirling saucer.
Sure. Swirling saucer. Is there the word spin at the end or is it just swirling saucer? Okay, thank you.
No, it's alien swirling saucers. You do the acronym.
Yeah.
Aliens. Oh, wow. Wow. That ass. All right, so... that queue is kind of boring.
That's the bigger disappointment, I think, because it is so barren. And then even the little area that you get that is covered and has things on
buzz.
It, it's the buzz. So it's like a reflection of Buzz Lightyear from Magic Kingdom. And then like none of the screens move. Like there's like it looks like the Buzz cartoon, but like nothing moves. Even the lights, like there's no light that like changes or anything. There's no like. Variants or whatever. Like I understand like certain things are expensive. Interactive queues are expensive, so you don't have to go that far. But I mean, at least like a screen that would blink or something.
How about this? I have a better idea.
Okay.
How about shade?
Well, yes, a covered queue would be fantastic.
So the first half of that queue is out in the elements.
I would say more than half.
Is it really more than half?
Because that buzz part is not very long. And that's you're only right. like an you're awning. Right. I would say three quarters, 80% of the queue is outside.
Both these queues are
straight
outside.
Up uncovered.
Now, while Slinky is undercover for almost all of it,
yeah,
there are portions that are not, and regardless, the portions that are covered are still out in the elements.
Yeah,
there's a fair amount of fans, but if it's summertime, I'm not going near that ride throughout 95% of the day. There's no way I'm doing it.
Yeah, because if you get stuck outside for 20 minutes, it's torture.
Yeah, it's very, very, it's uncomfortable. So we've been lucky that the times that we've gone, we've never waited very long. We waited an hour or so? Hour and a half?
No. An hour.
Yeah, an hour? Okay.
First thing.
Kind of recently. Not the first time we went.
The second time. We went at night.
And, we went at night. So that's how we would go through it. But let me tell you, it was still hot. It was still muggy.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. That is a very full queue, though. There's a lot of things to look at and be like, oh, this is nice. The queue over at Alien just doesn't have anything to do. But I will also say that the line hasn't been much longer than 45 minutes.
Yeah, and that's what it says. And I don't Alien. Even know if that's even what it actually
that's
is.
Very true. Very, very true.
But yeah,
Alien is fun. I think that's a fun little attraction.
Yeah.
So here's where my segue kind of goes, because I've said this before, so I'm trying to practice what I preach. Just like every movie that comes out doesn't have to make more money than the previous one to be called a success. I think that's a stupid way of looking at things. It also doesn't have to be as grandiose and huge as the movie that came out previous. We're talking about like series and this and that. I think that's also a silly thing to put on something. This is not supposed to be Pandora. This is not supposed to be Diagon Alley. It's not supposed to be Hogsmeade or Wizarding World, whatever you want to call it. It's very nice, but it is. I don't think it's there to blow your hair back. If they were looking to do that, they should have cut out a bigger swatch of land, because there's just not much that they can do in that land. And what they've done is they've filled that land to the capacity of the most that they could.
Yeah, I mean, in one way, yes, but in another way, there are a lot of random parts that I feel like they gave extra space. Like, you were able to walk all the way around Aliens and get over to Slinky. Like, and people normally wouldn't walk back there. You were just doing it for pictures. But I feel like it was a big area that was just, like, space.
There was, like, no one there.
Yeah, well, it's, like, behind the attraction. But, like, there would be no reason to go back there unless you were just going to take pictures of Slinky.
I think also it may have been a handicap exit or entrance. I think.
I don't know. I can't Nobody came over that way either way.
Yeah, it was relatively empty.
And
when
even
I was there.
Like the exit from Toy Story Mania now is very lengthy. It's a long path that goes through a lot of stuff, and it's like I feel like you could have made that exit a little different and maybe done some inside seating for Andy's lunchbox.
I don't know. I don't know how that with the existing ride mechanics. I don't know where the space is.
I don't know. They've changed those entrances and exits all around, so I don't know.
Yeah, but they always have to work around where the actual they can make them. You know,
yeah.
You don't have an unlimited amount of options once you build yourself into a spot. I think it's great. I think that your kids will love it. Mm-hmm. I do. I think that they'll really get a kick out of it. I think you'll get a kick out of it, too. Just don't expect what we kind of got. You know, no one is talking about Slinky the way anyone talked about Flight of Passage.
No.
You know, no one's even talking about either of those the way people talked about River Journey.
Mm.
Which I think I'll... like right now, if you ask me what's the best attraction in Toy Story Land, it's Toy Story Mania.
Yeah, it really is.
So that's, you know, that's where I lay on that. And that's fine. Not everything has to be the biggest thing that ever happened. Nor does acting like it is help at all, because that just comes off as stupid. Ryan, you've heard a lot and you've seen a lot. You know, what has been your impression from afar of the people's reaction to Toy Story Land thus far?
Let's see. Let's tiptoe to that minefield. People's reactions have skewed either. It's not as big and grandiose as I thought it would be. It's the exact same thing they've seen overseas, which was lackluster to them. To the, it's a fun kids area. It's a fun place for kids to go, have a Mater type ride, have a coaster that's like a medium grade coaster. So it's a step up for them, you know, as they're progressing through the, through the coaster ranks. You know, I haven't, you know, people on the logical end of the spectrum, I haven't heard anything horrible. They're, you know, no one, you know, they're not comparing it to Pandora, which is wonderful, because you're absolutely right. It shouldn't be. That's next door. The next door neighbor has all the Hasbro toys. That's where they're all going to live. And that's where you're going to want to go. But so I think it's fine. I think, you know, I think maybe they could have, you know, especially since they lost, the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids playset. They could have maybe put in a, you know, but again, they didn't have the blessing of size. They didn't have that going for them. I thought there might be some elements of, you know, like some little play elements there for kids. Maybe somewhere down the line that'll appear somewhere, but I wouldn't hold my breath. I think it's fine. I think it serves a purpose in that land or in that park that it needed to serve. It's giving them options for kids who, you know, aren't going to watch the Disney Junior show, but maybe aren't ready for Tower of Terror. So I think it's, you know, a great match to what the park needed. And it's it's built off of Toy Story, which is arguably the most recognizable Pixar property they have.
My biggest gripe with this,
with
the land is
the land we all love.
We have Toy Story 3. We're going to have Toy Story 4.
Yes.
So, like, I understand, like, you want to set these toys in a specific area. So making it Andy's backyard is one thing. But you take away all Toy Story 3 characters, and we don't even know what's going to happen in Toy Story 4. And now you've completely, like, said, like, well, this land is only these two movies. And I don't know. I think has
anyone said that? Because there's a book about Prickle Pants in the queue for.
But there, so but there's no bigger representation of, like, and they are setting it distinctly in Andy's backyard.
Just say it.
What?
There's not enough Lotso.
There's not enough Lotso.
That's really all you're saying right
no,
now.
No, but I would also like, I would have liked to actually had like a Mr. Prickle Pants like somewhere. I would have liked to have seen more of like those characters, because they did go to the extra length and
put. I don't know if there's space to put them in there.
But they do stuff in Toy Story Mania. Like they put Trixie in with, you know, Rex in the thing. Mm-hmm. Like they have. So it's like weird. They like sort of incorporated these things. There's a bajillion Green Army men. You could have put a Lotso or a Trixie statue somewhere.
She just wants a Lotso. That's what she wants. And I agree with her. The only sign of Lotso in that whole land is he's the front of the register.
Andy's lunchbox. I keep calling it Woody's lunchbox. It's not right.
The food was pretty good.
Yeah, the food was good.
It was a nice break from the burgers and chips that they kind of have throughout all of Hollywood Studios.
Yes.
Unless you go to Brown Derby, which is phenomenal. So I thought that was nice. I had the grilled cheese. Here's a pro tip. Never have grilled cheese when it's 90 degrees out. That's a fool's choice. That's an imbecile makes that choice. I am that imbecile. So like as fine as it was the whole time, I was like, kind of a moron has grilled cheese in the middle of summer outdoors.
You.
Yeah, man.
I had the turkey sandwich. That was delicious.
I had the turkey sandwich for breakfast. It was good.
Yeah, that was a hot one. Like the turkey sandwich hot. For lunch wasn't hot. It was just like a cold cut sandwich, but it was good. It was like, you know, nice fresh like Panera type bread.
You want to talk about conspiracy theories?
No.
Yeah, let's talk about conspiracy theories.
Oh, dear.
So, Ryan, as I say to you, like, hey, the queue at Slinky Dog is nice. It's got a lot to look at, stuff like that. You know what there isn't, though? Interactive elements. None. Guess what there also isn't at Alien? Interactive elements. None. During this opening, Disney launches an app called Disney Play.
Yeah.
Which you're supposed to use when you're in line to help kill time. Is that app a short way of not putting more money into the queue and making those interactive the way they've been doing for so long? Do you think this will continue in Toy Story, in Galaxy's Edge, with non-interactive queues after they went so heavy into the interactive queues? And I think did a killer job. Killer job. Peter Pan, the queue for Peter Pan is almost as exciting as the attraction for Peter Pan. You know, that queue area in Haunted Mansion is amazing.
Yeah, even the Seven Dwarves one.
Seven Dwarves is fantastic. And now we get a brand new land with Toy Story playing with toys. Nothing. But this app comes out and says, hey, play these games with your phone.
I'm gonna counter argue. I'm going to say no.
Good.
Because, so I think what you're going to get with Star Wars is more akin to Pandora. Really great things to look at, things to take in. You know, there's no interactive elements in that queue.
Very true, just, yes.
Yeah, you have to go through it.
Just to throw in, Pandora does have, in Flight of Passage, there's a whole lot of production value.
Yes, and I think you're going to get production value.
Okay.
I don't think there is any there. I think what you're running into is the backlash effect of things like Thunder Mountain. They put a ton of money into the Thunder Mountain queue, and you bypass most of that, I'll say 85% of the time. You don't get to go over and look at some of the signage. You don't get to play with the you know, things that look down below, or the cranks for the dynamite. You don't get to interact with any of that. You're just constantly moving. And so I think it's maybe a little bit of blowback on that. Yes, the lines are long in Toy Story right now, but I think they're looking long term. Those lines aren't going to be the same down the road. And you're going to have more elements that just sit unused.
Yeah, because just being in lines, like Steph and I were talking, it was like Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, and Slinky Dog only had a 70-minute line where, Flight of Passage was already, you know, at 100. Like, it was Slinky and Rock and Roller Coaster were at 75. But then,
God.
What?
I want to go to Flight of Passage, right now. That's how good it is.
Actually, I'll go to Navi River Journey. I want the River Journey. Let me go to the River Journey again.
I'll do you better. Go both.
There you go. That's how we do it.
Talk amongst yourselves. Toy Story. I'm going to find out what wait time.
So I think the play app. You know, you can spring it if you're at home and bored. I've played all the games on it just to see what they were like.
Mm.
It's not going to hold my interest in a line. Like, and I get that there may be some, you know, some kids, some teenagers that, yeah, that's fine. You know, and it's a lot of games that you already see in lines anyway, like the, you know, the what's the picture on my forehead, what's the description in that. But I don't see it really holding interest while you're moving through line. And even in the games, it gives you that continual notice of make sure you're paying attention to your surroundings. So I don't, you know, I see it as a fun little thing to mess around with, but I don't think it's where the queues are going.
So here's the wait times right now at most many parks at Magic Kingdom. I'm going to give you some numbers, okay? Peter Pan, 70 minutes, because of course. Kilimanjaro, 75. Avatar, Flight of Passage, 80. Navi, 80. Space Mountain, 85. Seven Dwarves, 95. What do you think the wait time is at Slinky right now, Ryan?
55?
75.
What's the aliens at?
That's what I'm going to look for next.
The only disappointment
I'm scrolling down.
Yeah.
So 35 minutes. Alien. Yeah.
So it's really probably not even 35.
That's probably a 20-minute wait.
Yeah. The biggest disappointment I've had with Slinky was when you're boarding Slinky, there's like a huge map on the, you know, back wall.
Yes.
And like it's hand-drawn by Andy, and it's like, okay, this is the track. These are all the cool things that are like you're going to see. You're going to see like this monkey temple and the aliens area and the
evil Dr. Porkchop. Firing laser beams at you.
You get none of it. You get absolutely none of it.
None of it's there.
There's no monkeys. You go over the alien saucers, but they don't even have anything on the roof. Like, put a couple of aliens on the roof, for goodness
sake. Wave at me. Do something.
Or just like, put them there and then have them go, ooh, when you go past.
When we went through the queue, you saw the track, so you knew it wasn't there. But when we got to the queue and you see that part, that's right when you're loading, I was like, oh, cool, this stuff must just be out of my eyesight or something.
Yeah.
And then we went on and I was like, oh, none of that's there.
They didn't even like put like Christ the monkeys. Almighty. Like you could have just put the monkeys across. Like you don't have to do anything with the monkeys. Like
there's a thing to have over there where it's just not even animatronics. They're just there.
Yeah.
You know, like, but they're not. So you just sort of go on a roller coaster. Now the ride vehicle itself, brilliant. Mm. Absolutely brilliant. The design, the look of the Slinky Coaster, the carts, is so good. And the sounds that it makes at certain times when you can hear it.
Yeah, like you could hear the spring.
Yeah. 110%, like phenomenal. But then when you get into like actual things to look at, it's Woody and it's Sally Jesse Raphael. She's got a clipboard. She wants to talk to you about something. You have Crying. Sally and Rex, and that's it. And that's it. But there's so much more in that map. And if anyone says to me, oh, well, just use your imagination, I'll slap you with a ruler. Like,
you
that
don't
is
have
just
a
ridiculous.
Ruler.
That's ridiculous.
Popsicle sticks. That's all you got.
Popsicle sticks.
But yeah, it just, it like I knew there wasn't like a big evil Dr. Porkchop statue, but like.
But there
just,
should be.
There should be. But there should also be like, you know, his other toys like littered about. Like they do like all of that construction to put Jesse and Rex up there. But then like the second half of the ride is barren.
Yeah. It reminded me of a very small version of a ride. Probably no one, maybe not many people will know. Nitro at Six Flags Great Adventure in Jersey, where that ride is like, it's like five goddamn minutes long. It's really, really long. And it just goes like off into nowhere because it was so huge they had nowhere else to put it. And I remember riding it. I'm like, we are in the woods. Like it was just the craziest thing, you know? And but that's what this felt like when you're in the second half, if you're not just staring at Star Wars. Where it was like, all right, we're just out here. This is not to knock the land. I think there's a ton of things to enjoy in the land, but I think it has some parts where you look at it and you go, I'm surprised I didn't do a little more. And for whatever reason, there's always a reason behind these things. They weren't twirling their mustaches and being like, we shall not put anything in.
Maybe like, they were. That's where Evil Dr. Porkchop was.
Ah, Evil Dr. Porkchop.
But there were some things, and there were even, if you look at the original artwork for the land, like the original concept art, there are pieces like Woody's roundup pieces, like buildings and things that didn't make the final cut.
Oh, really?
Like if you go back and look at the original artwork, like on one of the, on one end, I can't remember which end of the land it was. I want to say it was towards like the exit side of, you know, the back side of it. There are going to be, you know, little buildings that were from like Woody's roundup place that didn't make the cut. So I wonder if there were just some things that just kept getting cut. And if some of that maybe was in there and they went, yeah, we don't have space and time or money.
Or do you think it was because, like, I know, like, in Shanghai, like, that Toy Story Land's completely different. They have three different attractions. They have an Al's Toy Barn store. So I don't know if they were planning on putting that in.
You know, what is all of this?
Yeah.
Well, that looks like Slinky Q, but, like, over there it looks like a barn, what would have been Al's barn. Toy Barn and
this?
Yeah, and it's not there.
All right, so guys, just see if you want to follow along at home. I searched for Toy Story Land concept art and got the one where you're kind of like looking through the clouds onto the thing. Honestly, I mean, it kind of does look like it, but yeah, there's these like line of stores. When you come in from the left-hand side, there's these three stores, yellow, brown, and blue and yellow looking. And those don't exist. There's a paper airplane. I don't remember seeing that at all.
No.
I mean, it might be in there. And yeah, if I could zoom in, I feel like I would be able to see even more stuff. But this, yeah, it is what it is. But there's definitely some stuff that seems to not be fully implemented. Maybe it's not fully implemented yet also. You don't know this, you know? This might just very well be. Oh, and Ryan, to answer your question that you asked possibly, I don't know if it was in private or whatever. I asked about where the hell is Luxo? Because he was
on. Oh, no.
Yeah, I asked where's Luxo. Guess what? Hydraulics don't work on it, so it's pretty much buried.
Well, and it was also, as soon as that came out, was when the Luxo company got into the lawsuit and the pissing contest with Disney over their ability to use the name, because they never used the name Luxo. They'd never officially used it. And on that, the cord of the lamp, like in the lighting area, said wrote Luxo, and the ball said Junior.
Oh.
Below the figure. And so that was, you know, and for those who don't know what we're talking about, for a little while in Toy Story Land, near the lighting area on the left-hand side as you were entering Pixar Studios, there was every so often an audio animatronics figure of Luxo Jr. would come out and do a little show, just jump around and sing and play music and stuff like that. But it was very, very short-lived, and it disappeared fairly quickly.
Yeah, I don't think I remember that at all. That's the other weird part about I do not remember that at all. Hollywood Studios now that Toy Story Land is open, they have stripped down Pixar Place, like, to the point where it's weird.
The loneliest cast members are now in Pixar Place, what used to be Pixar Place. We went down that way, and a cast member was like, do you want to take a picture with Cruz Ramirez? And I was like, I guess so. Like, I feel bad. I didn't take a picture. Melissa did. But, like, that was my brain said, we should. We should.
Is that we're assuming, like, the Lightning McQueen show is going to go somewhere in that space?
That would make sense. Yeah. Yeah. Fill out that space. You can do something really nice with that. You could make it something nice. All right, guys. You want to move on from Toy Story Land?
No, but yeah, okay.
Let's talk about
No, Melissa, go ahead. You have something else?
No. I just,
No, I don't. That's why I'm asking.
I don't know. The thing is, like, it does deserve a deep dive. I'm sure, Ryan, when you come down here at one point, you'll go into all of it. Sure. There's a lot of little things that are really great. Like, over near the bathrooms, there's a little Scrabble piece by the water fountain, and it's a W. Like, it's just, like, little things that are really cute. You know, they have the Green Army Men littered all about, and they have, them kind of... with their comments over near Woody's lunchbox, being on the lookout and everything. I even like, and see, here's another thing that I thought was a Toy Story 3 reference. When Buzz is talking over near aliens, like, he, like, references his, like, feelings for Jessie.
Okay, but Toy Story 3, like, did not happen.
But then where's my Lotso?
Because Lotso never went to Andy's place.
Should have.
You got to remember that. Look, you're looking for, like...
He wound up back there because he's Melissa, on Sid's garbage truck.
But you're looking for, like, exact things where if this happened after Toy Story 3, there's no Andy's backyard.
I just... No, there's Darth Vader and what's-his-face are still around. Huh? You can put all the characters in this space. Like, it doesn't have to be restricted.
What? So it's like Star Tours where you have Hoth, but you also have Naboo, and it's the walkers and the
just throw everything.
You
there.
Could you and you know what? There's a little bit of that probably from what I've seen. There's a little bit, not probably enough. Who knows what they're going to do down the line? Maybe you may get your Lotso before it's all said and done.
My Lotso,
best. All right, you guys want to talk about a movie?
All right, let's talk about
movies. Hey guys, it's been a couple of months that we talked about a super reviewed a Marvel film.
a couple of weeks, you mean?
Yeah, it's all right. We have a whole, 5 month? No, 5, 6, 7, 8. 7 month drought until the next one, March. Eight month drought. So we got time coming up now, all right? We can all think about things.
We got things to think about, too.
Things to think about. All right. Ant-Man and the Wasp came out this weekend, the follow-up to the relatively surprising hit of Ant-Man. Paul Rudd returning as Scott Lang. We've got Evangeline Lilly as Hope. We've got Michael Peña as Luis. Guys, look, the meme idea of, hey, I want to see every Avengers movie narrated by Luis, blah, blah, blah. It's 1,000 people have done it. Don't post it. It's not original. It's okay. Read it before.
I haven't seen it. I want to see it.
I will kill you.
Okay.
Walton Goggins, the best man on earth. Raylan Givens is Sonny Birch. Bobby Cannavale is so good. He's Paxton in this.
What else do I know him from?
Boardwalk Empire? Yep. Chef?
No.
I don't know. Judy Greer is returning as Maggie, the estranged ex-wife of Paul Rudd. And then we have the people who really matter the most. Dave Dastmalchian as Kurt, and T.I. is Dave. Really, those are the two most. But we have a new baddie introduced here, Hannah John Kamen as Ava, also known as Ghost. You might remember her from One of the darkest episodes of what's it called?
Black Mirror.
Thank you very much. And also recently in Ready Player One, where she was the henchman of the guy who really made the Death Star. So that's a good way of finding a way through that. Randall Park does his usual thing. And Michelle Pfeiffer is thrown in the mix as Janet Van Dyne. Mike Douglas is back here as Hank. Lawrence Fishburne. Sweet Jesus, the casting directors of these movies just have the most fun. It's just embarrassing, the riches that they can pull from. So, Ant-Man and the Wasp. I was extremely excited about this movie because I fell in love with that title immediately. And I'm going to go to Ryan for your thoughts on Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So to start with, Walter Goggins is just playing Walter Goggins. Like, let's just call
him. Hey. Yes, that's the best thing, though.
Yeah, oh, it's absolutely great.
He's so good.
Wonderful. I was really looking forward to this movie. The first one's really fun. This one picks up right where it left off. It's a lot of fun. There are problems. It's gonna feel a little like you've seen parts of this movie before because you did. It's called Iron Man 2. But overall, it was fun. I really enjoyed it. It's a good addition. It's a nice way to, after the seriousness of Black Panther and the heaviness of Infinity War, it's a nice kind of, you know, shift of gear. It's a nice way to go back and go, okay, right, we can have fun with these. You know, these are still our superheroes. We can still have fun with this and not have to take ourselves too seriously.
Melissa.
Yeah, in the same vein, I like the fact that...
I was going to ask if you were hungry, but very well. You give me any thoughts on Ant-Man?
No, you know I'm not hungry. I eat.
Pizza.
I like how lighthearted it is, you know, the brevity in the interactions in the characters, you know, their, you know, quippy comments. I love Paul Rudd so much. I really enjoy his, you know, that's what I'm looking for. I don't know, like, when he's stuck in this situation, like, he still knows how to, you know, make the best of it. And you never, like, I don't know if this is good or bad, but, like, you never see him, like, sad or depressed. Like, he has probably some crappy things going on, but he's never like, oh, woe is me. Like, he just like goes with the flow, and like his attitude is just like, it'll work out, like somehow, whatever, it'll be okay. And I don't know, I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the fact that the Wasp did a lot more than Ant-Man did. She kicked a lot of butt. I was really happy with, you know, the fact that they didn't kind of like give her this cool suit and then like just let Ant-Man do all the cool stuff, you know, like they still gave her spotlight. And I really thought Ghost was one of the better villains that they've done. You know, it's up there with how they wrote Killmonger. Like, you understood her side of the whole thing. And I know, Ryan, you actually wrote a really great piece about it.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what I can say without getting too far into spoiler territory.
Oh, just basically, go. It's fine.
Say, yeah. Basically, you know, she's the product of an accident. That basically the reason she has powers is that her body is being ripped apart and put back together, so she can phase, she can be invisible, but it takes a toll. And the suit is kind of what helps keep her together. There's a, you know, her cell, for all intents and purposes, or what keeps her together. You know, keeps the quantum energy, you know, from killing her, but she is dying, and she's in constant pain. And as you know, it's a fictitious disease. You know, it's not something that anybody else has. But as somebody who has an autoimmune disease, as somebody who has a chronic pain, like, that was a gut punch to me. Like, I literally like cried in the movie because I was like, yes, I understand that. Like, the pain on her face when she's just trying to figure out how she's going to make it one more day, I get that. Like, I have days where it's tough to roll out of bed, you know, and yet I still have to put on my pants and go to work and tell everyone, no, I'm okay. It's tough. And so to see that and to understand that, you know, she makes mistakes, like she makes wrong choices repeatedly in this movie, but there's a lot of characters making wrong choices repeatedly in this movie. And it was really well done, you know, to give it that she wasn't necessarily the villain you thought she was, you know, and it was good to see that brought up, you know. And I know there's been some articles written about the ableist tendency to say, oh, she just wants a magical cure. She just wants, you know, something that's going to solve her problems for her, rather than deal with what she's living with. There's two sides to that. You know, I have a treatment plan. I work my treatment plan. But you can also – but I wait for the day the doctor says, hey, we figured out how to stop this. So I see both sides. Yes, they could have gone a lot further with it, especially with her being a woman of color, having a disability. Great. But it's still a heck of a lot more than we've seen in a villain or a character of any kind in a superhero movie, or a tentpole project in general. You know, you see it in the smaller pictures. To put it on blast where everyone's going to see it to some intents and purposes was really, really great. It was really wonderful. And yeah, she stole my heart the minute I saw her. I was like, yep, I get you. I understand this. And you know, if you didn't see it through that lens, after hearing this, go back and watch it again, because she's a really more fascinating character than I think some people are giving her credit for.
Yeah, and I kind of like how, you know, we were having a conversation one time, and it was like, you know, when movies are like, oh, you know, the rich guy, business guy is the evil man. It's like, well, yeah
Incredibles,
like,
it just came up.
Yeah, Incredibles. Like, okay, duh. Like, we all know at this point in time that, yeah, the rich business guy is probably the evil guy. Like, no kidding. I like how, you know, Killmonger, Ghost, like, there have been villains where it's like, they're not just this, you know, stereotypical rich businessman being the villain. It's like, I don't know if you want to say everyday people, but, you know, like, their plight is a little bit more...
everyday people...
Their plight is a little bit more understandable. You know, if you had billions of dollars, like, I don't know, that kind of is a little unrelatable. But if you, you know, have seen your world torn apart by gun violence, like, yeah, you want to figure that out so that way, you know, you can get that settled. If you have this, you know, terrible disease that is just ripping you apart literally, like, yeah, you just want this to be taken care of any way possible at this point to end your suffering. Like, so I don't know. I really like how they're kind of, like you said, like not putting like the same old up on screen anymore.
Right. And they give you the fall guy villain effectively in Walter Goggins.
Mm.
So you're able to play with her a little bit more. You're able to play in that gray area. You know, and like we said, it's like Iron Man 2, you know, it's a child of somebody who was wronged by our heroes, you know, or one of our heroes in the past. And this is a much more interesting way to take it as, you know, this is what happened. This is where I went, not just blindly, I'm mad at you because of who you are. It's more of, you know, I'm mad of where I am.
Yeah.
Okay. Ant-Man.
Melissa,
it was funny. You were describing the villain that someone else in this movie made a career on, Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
You know, he made a career on being that scumbag millionaire, you know, like... Oh. That's been his thing. And it's fun to see him in this role. I like seeing him in this role.
Can I just say,
yes.
For like the first half of the movie, I thought the thing that he was wearing in his ear was like a legit hearing aid. And I was like, is he really that old? Like, oh.
Like, I wanted to say, if no one's ever seen Wonder Boys, you should absolutely see the movie Wonder Boys. It's one of the best Michael Douglas performances. It's also done by Curtis Hanson, who did L.A. Confidential, I believe, and 8 Mile. So, you know, it comes from good stock and you should see that. Anyways, so I'm going to give you the reaction from somebody who doesn't suffer from chronic disease other than being a schmuck. I liked all of this movie, but none of this movie stuck with me. Like, it's exactly what Ant-Man was. It's the first Ant-Man. It's a ton of fun. I think everyone is having a good time in it, which I think is what this movie's supposed to be. Like you were saying, Melissa, I don't think I've ever seen Paul Rudd sad. I don't want to see a sad Paul Rudd in this movie. Like, this isn't that movie. Like, there's nowhere in this film that I want to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe a moment with his daughter just to kind of give you that grounding.
Yeah,
you know,
and he has like a quiet moment. But
he does. Yeah. He has a couple of them, and I think that that's all they need.
Yeah.
I'm here for not only for the Paul Rudd and the Evangeline Lilly team up, which is great. I'm here for the supporters. Mm-hmm. The supporting cast, I think, is what makes these movies at almost 2 hours long kind of fly.
Yeah.
But again, Bobby Cannavale is one of the best actors out there. And he's in it for legitimately 5 minutes. But every 5 minutes he's on it, it's a goddamn pleasure to see that man on screen. It's just, you see him and you're like, yes. You know, again, this was a nice little touch of going against the grain of the douchey stepfather, you know, who takes, you know, who remarries the wife, the long lost wife. And it's just, he's just a good guy. Luis is obviously Luis. I think the best movie, the best moment in the whole movie, none of the lead players are in it. None of them.
I know exactly.
You know exactly the moment I'm talking about. It just has to be with a, you know, disappearing, reappearing moment. And it just, it is by far, I think, the funniest damn moment in that film. I have not heard a pop from an audience on a joke that loud in a long time. Because no one expected, you know, the way
the
delivery
went. By the way, that joke
went.
Is on the soundtrack.
Is it really?
Oh, yes, it is.
Is it on Spotify? I got to listen to it just to hear it.
It's great.
It's such a great moment.
So great.
The villain, I guess we can call, Walton Goggins is the villain. Ghost is our gray area villain, the more we learn about her. I think that she's used fine. I didn't really get into her struggle until the very end. Because I felt like it was kept secret a little too long. Maybe for me. Because by then it was like, I don't know who this person is. It's just like, you know, Morpheus is like taking care of her. It's weird. And, you know, it was a good thing. But I think that she's good. I think that there's more to do with that character. And I hope that they do that with this character.
Yeah, I like how they didn't just end her like they've ended so many other villains.
Yeah, which again, guys, look, if we're going to be reviewing movies, I'm sorry, but just expect spoilers. This is sort of just where it is. You know what? I read reviews all the time and they're filled with spoilers. And then I try to like avoid everything. I don't know why. So the movie moves along very nicely. It has a lot of good visual gags. My biggest complaint was this was one of the films that I was like, I'll watch the trailers. I shouldn't have. Because they show you all of the best visual gags when it comes to Ant-Man and Wasp. They leave nothing to the imagination or the anticipation from the trailers. It's really bad.
They even showed the after credits scene like...
Okay.
Like blatantly, like beforehand. Yeah, like I had seen that. Pictures of that. Like I didn't think that was at the end. I thought that was going to be in the movie somewhere. And then when it wasn't, I was like, oh, okay. It was just like, you know, promo stuff that, you know, they did. But nope. I was like, ah.
So I think that this fits very comfortably right in the middle of the pack with the other Ant-Man film. I think it's a nice addition. I want to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth a second viewing. Just to kind of try to pick up on those little things that maybe I missed before, little moments.
There was a lot going on with it. That's...
There was. There was a fair amount. There was a lot of backstory and a lot of forward
story.
And
I appreciate with that backstory, you get some of, you know, Michael Douglas, if you don't know the comics, Hank Pym is a royal ass.
Not a good guy.
Yeah, he's not a good guy. He's listed as a good guy, not a good guy.
Yeah.
He has a lot of dark things in his closet.
Including, including beating his wife.
Right. He beats his wife. It's just a horrible temper. You know, he takes out his frustration on everyone else. And we're starting to see a little bit more of that. Like, you know, we haven't gone straight to the beating the wife, which I've been wondering if and when we're going to come to that.
I don't think so.
But yeah, I don't think so either. They're trying to keep these two light. But you get to see that, oh, he has a temper and he just fires people because they aren't doing what he wants them to do, or you know, their genius isn't his genius,
mm-hmm.
and he just uses people and discards them, and so we are seeing bits of that, and I appreciate bringing that element in to make him a little bit more of a well-rounded character.
I don't see them ever using the abuse angle because also number one, they don't introduce Janet Van Dyne as someone who has any qualms with meeting up with her estranged again, and if they then put in like, oh, well, he hit me this one time. Pfft, the blowback they would get from her, like, open arms, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think people would lose their shit, and with good reason.
No, and I think that they've built her in such a way that, you couldn't foresee that situation. Like, that situation came up, she's going to lay him out. Like, that's just not a question. Like, so.
Yeah, they've built them more as, like, partners and, like, working together and stuff. So,
yeah,
like,
very much.
To have it be, like, where he was even physically, you know, dominant over her, just, I think it would come off weird with the tone that they've set between them now.
Yeah, so, you know, just going back, my favorite moment happens in this comedy moment, but my favorite sequence is Paul Rudd not being exactly Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
I think is the best way of putting it, when he's sort of channeling someone else. And he channels that person right on target, like really, really well.
I want to see him.
Down to the hand moment, the movements and everything.
I want
to
see him and Tom Hiddleston like doing other people. Like, you know, when they had Hiddleston being like other, like I want to see those two like have a...
I wonder
off.
If that's a thing, but yeah, I mean,
even
Rudd,
if it's not on screen, like just off screen.
But Rudd really does a hell of a job in this very extent, this semi long sequence where he is channeling Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah,
and it's spot on. As someone who's watched Michelle Pfeiffer in movies his whole life, as most of you have, it is really spot on. I'm excited to see where they go from here. They've obviously done, you know, and we're gonna. We'll talk about the post-credit sequence right after we just sort of get our final words in. My final word is it's a great addition. It's a great light addition, which is what this is supposed to be. It's fun. It's got the same visual. There's nothing really new going on from the first Ant-Man. I would have liked to have seen an expansion on that, but it's really just sort of the same color palette, at least that I could tell. But I think that the parts all fit very well together. It's a fun time at the movies. And you know what? Sometimes that's all it's got to be. You know, just like we were saying before, not everything has to be The Dark Knight. And Ant-Man can just be comfortable being Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. Melissa, what's your final thoughts on it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I liked how it fits into everything. I liked, you know, that you didn't have to feel pressure about, like, you know, what's going to happen with this or that and the other thing. It was just like, you know, come along for the ride, enjoy, and, you know, laugh with everyone. I liked it.
Yeah, I think it was really fun. I liked, you know, there's a sequence at the beginning where they've made a cardboard box village with Cassie and and Paul Rudd, and it's really, that's just a really wonderful little, like, they've built their own Andy's Backyard Adventure in their house. It's really fun. I'm curious to see, you know, we've clearly left some characters on the table, which is a problem with some of the Marvel films. They clear everyone out and except for your main cast, and it's starting all over again the next time. It also makes me wonder, since there's so many unnamed Marvel movies sitting out there for, you know, Phase 4 and beyond, if they're not looking at a possible Thunderbolts movie. So we'll see, but it's fun. It settles right into the same vein as The Last Ant-Man, and it's one I'll definitely watch again.
Okay, so guys, we're going to talk about the post-credit sequence right now, just very briefly, because there's really only one thing to talk about from the whole thing, of it maybe two pieces. And so if you haven't seen the movie, go see it first before listening to this part. And if you have, then groovy. If you have not, though, have a good weekend. We'll see you next week and all that. But okay, so post-credit sequence, I think that there's obviously, you know, the Thanos happens.
the Thanos snapture
happens on Snapchat.
I like none of this.
Yeah, well, it's all good. So we, you know, we see that Hank, Janet, and Hope are all ashes, much like Gotham will be ashes.
No.
But the real thing is this, that A, we find Mr. Scott Lang in the quantum zone. B, is warned by Janet to watch out for those time vortexes. You can get sucked right in. And that's the line that really matters. So the next Avengers film is going to have some time traveling, folks. 88 miles an hour and all that stuff. So we are setting ourselves up for Paul Rudd, Scott Lang, to be in the middle of that and find himself maybe next to some younger-looking Avengers in some costumes.
With a tube of quantum energy whatever.
Yeah. healing, quantum healing energy, whatever the hell that was. Yes, Ryan.
So I'm not sure that it won't start with somewhere in the future, the distant future, relatively distant future. Just considering some of the casting pieces that are out there, the fact that we want Cassie as an adult, and knowing her role in the comics, and knowing that she plays with time travel a little bit.
Wait, I don't know. Tell me.
So in the comics, how far we want to go? Okay. So in the Avengers, at one point there's a series called Disassembled. It's basically where everything hits the fan and a whole bunch of Avengers die, and a lot of them ended up sticking for a relatively long time in comic terms.
2 months.
Right. Cassie is now an adult and becomes part of a superhero, but she basically, through some alliances with other superheroes, is able to use time travel to go back and bring her father to the present time, to bring him back to life, effectively negating his death. So I could see that happening, and then I could see him, with his knowledge of the quantum realm from being in there for so long, to go back and be like, you know what? I'm going to use the time vortexes, and I'm going to go hop, skip, and jump and try to fix this before it became a problem.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, we got to see. There's a lot of ways they can go booted. Yeah. And I don't know how long that last Avengers film is, but they are definitely leaving a lot of story to tell on the table. So where were we? Two hours and 25 minutes last time, I think.
Something.
I think this will be 245 maybe.
Easy. I think there's so much that they're going to have to do just to get through some of it.
Wolves.
I don't want an Ant-Man in the Avengers movie. Like, I don't need it to be their second fiddle, but there's a lot of ground. And we haven't even gotten to Captain Marvel yet, and I can't imagine that's a small part.
Yeah.
So,
Does she go to the quantum realm?
Probably not.
She does a lot of things.
I think she's just in space.
I know, but I'm just wondering, how do you get him out of the quantum realm?
He gets sucked into a time vortex and pops out right around the time when the Avengers are fighting the New York battle. There you go. Yeah. She didn't say it because he wasn't going to get sucked into it. Like,
no, I know he eventually does.
And that's it. That's how you get out of it, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, he'll get sucked into one of those things and it'll spit him out in a different time. That's all it is.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. All right, guys, I think that's it for our episode this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have no idea what we're doing next week, but we'll figure it out. Do we know what we're doing next week?
No.
We don't remember, right?
It's a surprise.
We booked everything like 3 months in advance, but that was 3 months ago.
Yeah. And things change.
Yeah, things change. Things change, as they always do. All right, guys. Well, hey, thank you so much for tuning in this week. And guess what happens? This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, or traveling anywhere around the globe. Visit the experts over at mei-travel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. We are lastgenpodcast.com. You can find us at lastgenpodcast.com. Surprising. No? Yes? No. Shouldn't be. You can find us on Twitter for the show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Facebook, Disney Magic Hour. Add yourself, add your friends. And you can find the show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. Melissa, two other parts of notice.
Instagram, we're at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you head over to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, you can find ways to support the show there. And we'll be updating some of our rewards at some point.
And the Main Street Gazette is at mainstgazette.com. If you're looking for us on Instagram or Twitter, it's mainstgazette. And on Facebook, just search for Main Street Gazette and you'll find the page.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Pete. Good night, folks. See you next week.